Hi, everyone. Welcome to Two Bald Guys Talking Safety. I'm Langdon DeMint.
And I'm Julian Taylor.
And welcome to our podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody. And welcome to Two Bald Guys Talking Safety live podcast. My name's Julian Taylor.
And I'm Langdon DeMint.
Thank you. Jumped in very neatly there, mate. Yeah, I almost felt it was a bit superfluous to do that because our avatars had introduced themselves already, so they kind of done it for
That's
us.
That's true. Yeah, I didn't think of that. We're working on the live thing, right?
So yeah, it's yeah. The thing is, you can tell this is live because it is. It's going to be a ramble about safety today, which hopefully will add some value to your life. So thank you, everybody, for jumping on this afternoon. We've got a few topics we wanted to hit upon, slightly different today. I suppose we're thinking more about you, the health and safety professionals, and I suppose that the career of the health and safety professional. So I'm going to throw it straight at you, Langdon, let you do a bit of the talking. And I suppose one of the first things we wanted to think about was how do we make health and safety an attractive career, and how do we encourage people to get into the career? And it's really resonated with me, this, because I did an event yesterday. It was kind of 50% of the bald guys doing an event, and it was a panel at the safety show in Birmingham in the UK. And we had a nice full audience. It was great. And I actually asked them the question, how many of you fell into health and safety by mistake? And I've got to say, I think probably 80% of the hands went up to say they'd kind of fallen into it by mistake. And it seems to be this career, doesn't it, that people kind of get into through the back door. It's not a plan. So Langdon, I'll stop rattling there and let you chip in. How do we start to change that so that people sort of see it as something that they want to do when they're leaving college?
You know, first off, I think I should state the obvious. I chose health and safety 100% for the glory. I mean, you know, you can paint the picture all you want, but it was for recognition. In all honesty, it was very much, I think it's funny. So in the States, and for those of you that are joining, good morning. It's 10 o'clock here in the Central Time, so good morning as well. But really, I think about, so I got my master's in occupational health and safety, industrial hygiene specifically, or emphasis. And it was very much, I love helping people. I love trying to really, you know, help organizations, help people out however I can. I'm a very caring individual. That's me in general.
And I think you've hidden that well from me. I do have to say, but
stop. You know it. You know how truly I like to be jovial, but at the same time, the heart is, you know, there's serious care. But in actuality, I think it is something that you've seen in the States a lot more, whether it's undergraduate programs, whether it's master's programs like I did, that are really trying to pump out, quote unquote, more health and safety professionals. Because historically, I think to what you said, it is very much the, well, I got put in this role because whatever, XYZ. And now we've seen that transition to being more focused on creating an environment where health and safety is crucial, and you're trying to bring people into it, because it is. It's a very fulfilling job. And realistically, you can find a job. In most cases, you just might have to travel. And I think that's the finicky part you have to keep in mind. But there's, for the longest, and I don't know if they still do, Murray State, for example, had 100% hiring. And it was because if you were willing to move, you could find a job. So I think right off the bat, it is very much, I think it's an awareness. Most people don't know what is health and safety, or the first thing that comes to their mind is, do you work for OSHA? And so you got to go through that rigmarole. But I think bring about what it is, to me, that's one of the initials.
And even even this podcast and other people who do podcasts, is, I think it's great because it's starting to. Mm-hmm. We've had people come up to us who are students who listen to this, so it's raising awareness of what the profession is all about. I love what you said there, though. It's about actually, if you're a people person, it's absolutely about a people-centric role, isn't it? Where you're working with other people, helping other people. You've got to be a good communicator, a good people person, if you're going to be successful in safety. And I think I'll throw this back to you again. I suppose it's thinking about what are the other skills, knowledge that you're going to gain that actually sets you up for a really good long-term career generally in a business.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question. And I will reiterate that right quick about the importance of working with people, communication, being open to actually understanding what's happening in the workplace. But, you know, it's easy. So my undergrad was in biology, and so I understood the science. When it comes to industrial hygiene, I understood the science aspect of chemical enters the body, you know, yada yada. I understood a lot of some of the basics, because some of it's right, it's common sense. But at the same time, there's a lot of regulations, there's a lot of organizational best practices. Yep. So to me, some of those are foundational, but if you're not able to apply it to big picture, meaning how does this affect the organization, right? That's when, if you can't make that connection, I dare say EHS professionals are going to have a difficult time.
I think that's a really important point, is actually, and we talk about it all the time, don't we, is that how important is compliance? Obviously, there's an importance to it, but actually you're looking for people who can, like you say, look beyond compliance and actually make it relevant to people on the shop floor, isn't it? And to leadership, I'm going to hasten to add. So how do you actually make it relevant to all the people across your organization? So it's a different kind of skill set other than just being somebody who wants to be analytical and look at numbers. But when you think about the sort of skill sets that people need to be successful in safety, or the skills they acquire through being in safety, there's a whole raft of things that make you really attractive to employers. I mean, when you think about things like you've got to be able to set up management systems and process, and you've got to be able to make those work effectively, haven't you? You've got that communication skill set and that people management skill set. There are so many skills that you actually pick up as a safety professional that actually mean it doesn't need to be a career for life, but it could be actually a stepping stone onto something else.
Yeah. No, and I think it's, to me, it's a very good profession. I know we're going to get there. There is a lot of ways that you can make it pretty high up, you know, in the EHS realm for an organization, whether it's, you know, some type of organizational, or if it's like a nonprofit, you know, what I'll say, more of the political roles, you know, with ASSP or NSC, whatever, versus your organizations. But I think it's imperative that you understand the basics, you understand the foundation. But then, just like we're talking about, if you can't apply that, meaning, you know, why do I need an ergonomics program? I don't know, just making something up. And if you don't say that, okay, this is a pain, we're having a lot of issues here, we don't have anything developed, why do I want to develop it? Not just to help, but then how is it going to help the business? And how can I continue? And I mean, it's almost five steps that you can improve it, but if you don't paint the picture for what that actually could do to leadership, to what you said a moment ago, I mean, that's crucial. It's easy for me to go talk to Jimmy, Judy on the front line and try to get them a little more, hopefully, vested in why they care. I mean, that's easy, right? Because They want to go home healthy and safe and come back to work. But if I want, I guess this is slightly shifting, but if I want budget from a leadership perspective of being able to put a focus, I have to understand how to actually make that real. And that's when it gets challenging. It's, you know, creating a program is very difficult, but at the same time, it's easy to write down and check all your boxes. But then when you try to put that into action, that's when it seems like you start seeing a lot of roadblocks. What do you think?
Well, I'm just laughing because I'm thinking, could you only come up with names beginning with J, Jimmy and Judy?
I got to be honest. As soon as I said that, I was like, you know what? It was easy. Like, it was quick.
I've got to come up with a name.
Jules.
Jules. You could have just had Jules and Judy, couldn't you? There you go.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I think you're making a really good point, which is, and I've said it for a while, I think a lot of the health and safety training and education misses out on this, which is actually, you've got to be a great influencer, haven't you? When you think about the health and safety role, you've got to be able to influence up the tree. So like you say, to get the buy-in, the investment from senior leadership, but then also you've got to be able to invest across the rest of the business if you're actually going to get people to do the things that you want them to do. So you're investing in a new process. How do you actually get people bought into to following and using that process in the way that you intended?
Yeah, and I guess I'm interested before we carry on. So my undergrad, I know I've told my story of how I got into health and safety, and then, you know, fortunately that was my master's, and I've jumped right in. So I've trained, educated, rolled through as a health and safety. Your experience was a little different. What do you see from an EHS profession coming from a different to how that's tied in organizations through your journey and even to now?
Well, my journey,
sorry, we didn't talk about this.
My journey was a crazy one, and I often say I've got a CV of nightmares, and actually, if I was to go to a recruiter with it, they'd probably just throw it straight in the circular filing cabinet. But I think one of the key things is, I mean, I was in sales, and Simon Jones, our friend Simon Jones, who's written a couple of great books, you've got to be he talks about the safety salesman, and you do have to be able to sell ideas, don't you? You have to be able to sort of sell a concept to people to get them to buy into it. And one of the practical things, we like to give top tips, don't we, on the podcast. Well, one of the top tips that I can talk about is actually for safety people, when they try to get investment and they try to get sort of budget from senior leadership, often they do it with quite a narrow focus, and the focus can often be, it's very safety focused, which seems like common sense. But actually, one of the things, and it's interesting because another friend of the pod, Phil Roberts, was talking about this yesterday, is what you've got to do is actually understand where it's going to deliver some business impact for the broader organization. So when you talk about skills, it's that sales piece almost of, if you can understand what this safety project's going to do to make the business more successful, that's a far more powerful story to take to senior leadership, and particularly to a CFO, to get investment, rather than just talking about potentially it's going to save us some time here, it's going to make life easier for these people here. Yeah. So, So in terms of my background, that's one of the things I think is really valuable, is that ability to be able to sell a concept. Yeah.
No, and I'm glad that's everyone. I threw a curveball at Jules, and thank goodness.
I was not expecting that.
I just thought about it, but it's good, right? So you had, and you alluded to it very well. I mean, and I knew that. You had, okay, maybe it wasn't the hands-on heavy EHS experience, but you had, and you didn't dive into it, but you had had some experience working with EHS professionals, doing a little bit with that when it was sales to then coaching, and then actually kind of working with organizations. And that to me showed the different perspective, because you understand seeing it from the, I'll say, maybe outside, and then seeing it from the inside of how it plays to the bigger picture. Because it's easy for me as an EHS professional to sell the need for more EHS when something's happened. If an incident has happened, it's honestly usually it is easier, because there's usually going to be some type of financial disruption that occurs from the direct, indirect costs. And, you know, you want to keep people healthy and safe, but to the business, and they want to do that, there's also a lot of avalanching that comes from that. So it's easier to sell to those organizations the importance of EHS. But for the organizations that aren't having incidents, or they feel like they're doing things really well, that's a challenge to get buy-in to health and safety. And if you don't have everything that you just alluded to being able to paint the picture, state the big, that's a challenge. That's a big, big challenge.
Yeah. It's, I think you make a really good point there again, which is it's easy to get budget in a crisis because people want things put in right. They want to get back on an even keel and get things working again. The most challenging thing, and we see it all the time, is when a safety professional says, yeah, okay, we haven't had incidents, but we're actually, we can get better. And again, if you think about a maturity curve, we can move up the maturity curve and we can become better as an organization. The easy answer from senior leadership at that moment is, well, why do we need to do it? Everything's okay. So you've got to be able to sort of go in with a really cogent argument to say, this is why it's worth doing. So I think that's important. And again, Phil yesterday was talking about this. He was talking about when you're looking at any kind of project is starting to look at it from, yeah, you've got your safety perspective, but look at the other parts of your organization. So look at it from the human resources angle, look at it from the operations angle, and maybe most important of all, look at it from your CFO's perspective in terms of how is this going to help each one of those functions to become more effective? So how can safety be a lever in your language to actually affect all of those other departments? So again, if you can affect production or operations in a really powerful way, that has a direct impact on the entire business. So again, people start to sit up and take notice of that. And I always have this sort of image in my mind when we're talking about budget of a pie, and you slice that pie up into pieces, and actually there's lots of people who are wanting to grab a piece of that pie. So actually senior leadership are going to be listening to the most important arguments, aren't they? You're laughing because you're thinking about pie now, aren't you?
I am thinking about pie. Pizza and key lime, just FYI.
Okay, very nice. So you brought dessert into it as well.
Truly. Yep. No, I do agree though. And it's interesting because, you know, we're really diving into a lot of aspects of progression, how you move. And you know, we kind of started with how do you make EHS look more appealing, or how do you get people into that? But I think it's important of everything we're saying, because you really need to, I guess I'll say, state the obvious that's sometimes not obvious to what the role of an EHS professional looks like. Because it is maintaining the organization's EHS programs, policies, procedures, but then it's getting people bought in to why EHS matters, frontline workers, to the mid-level, to the leadership. And then you have to figure out, how do I get the continual buy-in and the budget to everything we've been alluding to? Because there is a challenge of getting people in EHS, keeping them, and then progressing them, right? And there's a lot that comes to mind when you think about the importance of why we want to get people invested. How do we make it look appealing? Because it's very, very challenging. And burnout, I mean, depending on the organization you work with, I mean, there's a lot of things that can obviously disrupt.
Well, one of the other things I got down here was, before I ask my question, actually, I'm going to ask you another question. What do you think that If I was to say that to the average person on the street, what's your perception of a health and safety officer or health and safety professional? What do you think would be the typical kind of answer, do you think?
So I can give this from my perspective,
I hasten to add here, I don't want any of the audience to take offense at any of the answers that come out here. Okay. Well, we're talking over generalizations. Yeah,
for sure. And this is literally from my experience, because, you know, I met Lindsay, that's my wife, before we got married, meeting her friends, you know, you go into all that, or if you meet new people that don't know you and they don't know your role within an organization, what's the logical question? You don't ask really, how's the weather? You ask, oh, well, what do you do? And I used to like it, but hate that, because what do you do? Well, I'm a health and safety professional. 90% of the time, so you work for OSHA. No, I don't work for OSHA, you know, and you go in to try to, and the others, I mean, I guess I should say, the others were kind of like, oh, so, you know, it was a very questioning, inquisitive look. And I think it's when you start talking about, well, you know, I've come up with different things over the years, but it was very, well, you know, let's take a, you know, this automotive plant down the road. Yeah. Well, they have someone called a health and safety professional. Basically, you ensure that that person is at work, healthy and safe. They're able to do their job and they can go home healthy and safe. I mean, you know, there's a lot of different scenarios you can come up with, but I would dare say the majority of the time it was always framed around, and that's me in the States, of course. So you work for OSHA, or what exactly? Are you a doctor? I'm like, no, yeah. I'm a master, but not a doctor. just kidding. That's tough.
Yeah. In the UK, let's put it like that. I'll tell you a story. I was on a really crowded train one day going down to London, and so I'm sat at a table with four total strangers. And it's exactly the same thing with the question, what do you do? And the woman sitting next to me, she said, oh, I'm in the police. And everyone else got talking to her about all the interesting crimes that she got involved with handling. So it was like, yeah, that's quite a sexy, interesting job. And then they finally got to me and they said, what do you do? And I said, oh, I'm a podcaster. And it was really funny because they were all excited. Oh, you're a podcaster. What's your podcast about? And I went, health and safety. And they just went, oh, and kind of moved back to, so tell me about police stories. And it's that typical perception, isn't it, of what's a health and safety person? It's the health and safety. It's the policeman walking around with a clipboard and eye of his jacket who's just telling people off. And it's I think part of changing the perception of safety is changing the perception of what safety people like. And I think it almost comes back to what we've just been talking about, which is probably the way that the things that they do within their own organization changes that perception, doesn't it? So for example, you think about, we've talked about how do you get budget. Well, if you're running sort of major change projects, if you're running, taking investment and using that money within the business, if you start to do things in a slightly different way and you start to take into account those broader parts of the organization, like operations, human resources, finance, and you start to demonstrate sort of compelling results based upon what you've done, that starts to change the perception of what's this safety person here for. And they're not just there walking around checking on things. Yeah. Okay. Before we carry on with that, just a little prompt out to anyone who's listening. If you've got any questions that you want to throw at us, see if you can curveball me like Langdon did, throw it out there. And we'll answer those questions sort of towards the end of the podcast. So I think for me, one of the key things in terms of changing perceptions is actually thinking about what we do and doing it in a far more pragmatic way. And I think the other thing that comes off the back of running successful change projects is actually, if you're going to be really selfish, it makes your CV look better, doesn't it? If you can actually show that you can make things happen and you can make change happen effectively, again, that's a really valuable trait in an employee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think to me that's another crucial aspect, because it is so much really and truly project management. I mean, not trying to, you know, degrade or devalue or anything like that, but it's just because there's so many things when you really take a step back that an EHS professional does, you know, definitely for those of you that are listening, yeah, shout out what you got, what your thoughts around that, because it's kind of like now a lot of organizations have added an S. So the sustainability, and an EHS professional sometimes is handling that. And it gets cumbersome because, you know, we think about what it used to be like. Even in the realm of EHS, you had kind of your safety, then you had your environmental, and then you had your health, which might be more the industrial hygiene. And in a single organization, you could have three people handling each one of those. And right, it can be very, it's because it can be very taxing. It can be very inundated with information, with needs, with focuses. And you started seeing a little more of a step back, except for the large organizations that, you know, have greater needs, greater risks in general, where they need that. But it there's a lot to the EHS function. And when you think about bringing people in, and it is a very fulfilling, you see the importance of what you're doing, how you can help. I think that's when you start realizing, well, how do we actually make positive changes for career progression? And that's where it gets, to me, even more complicated, because it's not always a quick and easy answer. It's having to truly think differently and even think outside the box of how you can be better, how you can get better, how you can apply that to the organization.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about career progression there as well, and that's an interesting one. We had sort of Phil Roberts and Karen Hewitt were both on the panel yesterday, and they had some really interesting sort of thoughts on this. I was sort of talking about, I threw a question out there around how do we get safety people progressing into senior leadership positions? Because what you tend to see is the safety person isn't the person who's generally targeted to move into those kind of roles within an organization. So again, some of the stuff we've been talking about starts to change that perception and make them a better fit for those positions. I think it was Phil came up with a great point, which was actually, why do we have to look at a career outside of safety? Why can't we actually get it so that we make safety important enough that actually it becomes a board level appointment where the head of safety has got that influence within an organization?
Yeah. If you saw me disappear for a minute, I was actually looking at a magazine that had the, every year they put out like CEOs that get it, organizations that get it. And a lot of the, yeah. And it's a magazine in the States that does that with NSC. And I think it's, I love reading those because a lot of them actually were EHS professionals. So you take a step back and you start thinking, what was different? And to me, it was a realization by the organization of the importance primarily of EHS. And then what does this person have that's not just EHS and to everything we've been talking about? Because there's a lot of organizations, there's a lot of good, I think, good things that EHS professionals are doing. And honestly, you have people that they could not do any better for the organization. I truly believe that. But if the company itself doesn't see the value, in my mind, and I very well could be wrong, I would love for someone actually to either corroborate or say that's stupid to this, is that sometimes there is no progression and it stops. And that's, and I'm not saying, I mean, obviously there's always a, an apex, so it's always going to stop. But if it stops, let's say at just like a manager level, and there's no seat at in the C-suite or no upper level director role, to me, that's missing the mark, because you're not trying to show the value that EHS can play in the overarching organizational function, which is it's huge.
Yeah, I mean, we've said it loads of times, haven't we? On here, the things that leadership say and do just has that immediate ripple effect, doesn't it, in terms of whether people are going to buy into safety or not buy into safety. And it was interesting. I had a long conversation with Karen on Monday night, sort of before we went to the safety show, and we were talking about, actually, have we nailed the leadership issue yet? And I don't think we have. I think we've still got loads of organizations out there where, at best, leadership are kind of ticking the box to say, yeah, we do safety, because they see it as a tick box exercise. And I mean, it's interesting. I don't know whether I've told you this yet, but we're going to get Karen back on the podcast, because she's just recently done a safety, she's done a safety survey, and there's some really interesting stuff coming out of her survey. One of the key points that she was talking about was actually, when you talk about engagement, key in driving engagement is actually the leadership piece. But a lot of safety professionals focus on the front end, because that's the easier thing to do. It's probably the slightly less scary thing to do, because a lot of us don't feel that comfortable going and trying to deal with the C-suite, do we? Let's just be sort of practical about it. So actually, when we talk about engagement, we've got to get comfortable with, when we're thinking about engagement, including leadership in all of those conversations, and making them sort of start to move beyond the ticking of boxes sort of exercise. And that's why I started starting to think about this question of how do we get safety professionals to move into senior leadership positions? Because if you get an astute person who's been a safety professional, but they can demonstrate those other skill sets around sort of business management, business success, it's great, because you've actually got somebody in the boardroom with the right mindset, haven't you? But I'd also lean towards Phil's point, which was, let's see if we can get somebody in there with a title of sort of, I don't know what it would be, but C, and then CEHS, Chief Health and Safety Officer, is maybe where we need to start to go, is that's a new acronym that we could add to the list.
The Chief EHS. I do think that's a good point, because it is easy to, there's a lot of, I had friends like that still, where it's a lot of EHS professionals are more comfortable being in a high hazard environment with the frontline workers than they are bringing to light something that's imperative or something needs to be done to senior level management or to the C-suite in general. Whether that's because personal comfort levels, whether that's because of knowledge of what they're focused on, or maybe it's because they don't, they don't understand the applicability of how it affects the entire organization, whatever it is, I think it's very telling to how to think differently for EHS professionals, and we think about how changes over the last few years, from BBS to, which I don't like, and we've talked about that, not to go crazy, but when you think about where that came and now what the Sydney Deckers, Todd Conklin's, all those around human performance, and where are we seeing really and truly, where do we see the focus for these, for improving workplaces? What do you think it is? I mean, I have my supposition, but what do you think, Jules? One word. See if we're truly mind connected.
No, I'm going to get you to give me your word first.
If with all these things, it's all about true change. I mean, that's what we're trying to figure out, is how to make the, where all these putting in new
processes. I thought you were going to say camaraderie for a minute. I nearly was waiting for camaraderie. So, yeah.
That would have been fair, actually. It's a C. It's still another C.
Yeah.
But it is. It's, you know, we think about everything, and it's all about changing and trying to figure out different ways to improve. And for a lot of workplaces, if they don't see that value because it's different than what they've historically done, whether it's a new observation process, whether it's new, you know, thinking, let's truly look at human performance. How can we get better in our organization? Well, all of these changes are overviewing all the incremental changes that have to occur. And if leadership doesn't put an emphasis or a spot at the table for that, you're always going to be stalled to a certain level. I mean, that's my, you know, very well, probably wrong. My kids tell me I am often, but I think that's something, right? Because if you don't get buy-in, you're not going to have a viable EHS process within your organization.
And that really aligns to any, I suppose, key role in an organization. Success comes from change and improvement, doesn't it? It's what underpins ISO standards, but also successful businesses don't stand still. I mean, I look at our business and we're running, I think, 5 projects at the moment. We call them cruxes. And it's about what are the difficult challenges we have as a business that we need to work out and resolve. So it aligns absolutely to success in other areas of business. So I think, again, it's this theme that's run through the conversation, which is safety does prepare you to step up to those more senior roles. One other thing I was going to talk about, Langdon, was actually how well do we understand our leaders, senior leadership teams? Because it's quite easy, isn't it, particularly in large organizations, to be quite detached from those people and not really interact with them on a regular basis. And I think another sort of practical tip is to actually try to get the time with your senior leadership teams to actually understand what's important to them, not what's important to them around safety, but actually just full stop, what is important to them. And then you can start to work out that equation, can't you, of actually, okay, so how does safety play into that? So actually, how does safety start to help them to succeed with the other things that they're trying to succeed with? And it's quite often there is a quite tangible link there that you can use. And again, that then feeds into all of those future conversations you're going to have around change management, new projects, investment, and so on.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I don't have a lot to add to that, honestly, other than just the simple. That's why I think human performance, human factor, you know, other elements are playing such a heavy role in your typical, I'm saying typical as quote unquote EHS needs, focuses for the organization. And it's because everything you're doing is trying to improve greater change. I mean, change management is, that's what it is. If I don't have those goals set, if I don't have the proper alignment within the organization, for myself, from frontline worker, you know, all the way up fluid, not only am I going to probably not be successful in EHS, but I'm not going to be able to paint the picture to everything you just said to the large broad streak of being in that role and the application of it. I mean, it's continuous improvement, change management. I mean, that's really, it's boiled down to those two things.
And one of the things that's just thinking about it is performance management, isn't it? Which is, again, whether you're in production, whether you're in sales, how do we get better performance out of people? So if as a safety professional, you can start to demonstrate, I've implemented a new process, I had these success factors, which isn't easy for me to say, obviously. I've managed to hit those success. Thank you. I managed to hit those success factors. And actually, these were the outcomes that we got as a result of it.
Yeah.
Again, you start to just demonstrate those general good management, good leadership skills, don't you, that are valuable. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and then you hit the whole And that's a totally, I guess, different potential conversation of the struggle. But if you're doing all these things to the best of your ability, you feel like you're hitting all these, there's sometimes you're still not going to get a seat at the table. No. And that's a different conversation as far as the organization I've worked with, global organizations that many of us know the names for, and we consider them just, you know, top notch. And I've also seen that some of their processes and the way they view things were not top notch. I mean, everybody's right. I mean, we all hit ups and downs, but there's still areas of improvement. And if you're not reflective on wanting to do that, they're not going to make that. So it is, and you said it at the very beginning, it is very much, how do you sell yourself and what you're trying to do for the, yep, for the company? In keeping people healthy and safe, you're doing what you need to do. For those of you listening, don't take that like you need to be a salesman. But if you do that successfully and you're doing it to the best and you're trying to paint the picture, you're doing the most important thing. And if the organization doesn't see that, leadership doesn't, you know, that is a different conversation, yeah, I would say.
Yeah. And I suppose that is the frustration. And again, I don't want people to take this conversation the wrong way, that it's all about, it's all about being able to sell and it's all about investment. Why do we all come into safety? We came into safety to keep people safe. But I think you've got to be really pragmatic that actually, if you're going to be successful, you need other people on board. You need people to invest hard-earned cash into some of the things that you need to do. If you want to buy new systems, if you want to put new equipment into place. And actually, if you're going to do that, you've got to be able to have those conversations and have them in the right way that actually gets people bought in to what it is that you're trying to do and why you're trying to do it. And the why is often, it's an important part, but it's not the be all and end all. Yep.
Mm-hmm. No, because it's easy. I can create some beautifully written programs, policies, procedures, but if they aren't applied, implemented, and people, I don't paint the picture, then otherwise I just have a book of nothing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if somebody comes in, oh, I got it, but that's it. So I think that's an excellent, excellent point.
We've all seen it. I was a complete ISO cynic for a long time. And I'll tell you the reason why, because I worked for this pretty shoddy company. This is a long time ago, right at the start of my career. And it was when 9001 was sort of first sort of becoming a bigger thing and you started to need to have it. And they were quite shoddy, really, in the way that they did things a lot of the time. And they said, oh, we're going to get 9001. And I was thought, oh, so is this going to change the way that we do things? Are we going to start doing things properly now? And they managed, they got 9001. And what it just proved to me was it was a tick box exercise. As long as you could show the right pieces of paper at the right time, you could get this sort of accreditation that then allowed you to go and do business with certain organizations. Didn't actually have any effect whatsoever on the quality of the end product or the end solution. I was thinking, this just doesn't make sense in my mind. So I think what I'm trying to say there is trying to move beyond that to a point of actually things making a difference. Okay.
No, I 100% agree with that. It's easy to manage tick box exercises.
Yeah, that's it. Anyway, we are coming up to time. That was our health. So that was our health and safety ramble for this week, otherwise known as the Two Bald Guys Talking Safety podcast. It's been a pleasure to talk to Langdon this afternoon. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. I'm going to hand over to Langdon to finish in his inimitable, I said that quite well, style. Over to you, Langdon.
Yeah, thanks. And join us next time where we will even probably potentially expand upon this topic and take it to the next phase. But for those of you who are going about your days as you're starting your mornings, if you're in the UK, as you're starting to ease into the evenings, what we ask is that you stay healthy and safe and ultimately care for others and watch each other's back out there. Thanks for joining, everyone. Hey everyone, really appreciate you tuning into this episode of Two Bald Guys Talking Safety. Please follow and subscribe to wherever you stream your favorite podcast or visit us at evotix.com.
And if you want to see how follically challenged we really are, come and check us out on YouTube. If you've got value from the podcast, please go to Apple Podcasts. And in the review section of this podcast, if you could leave us a review or a rating, that would be great.
And as always, everyone, while you're going about your days, about your normal lives, stay safe out there and watch each other's back.
Okay.
Oh.
You there?
James's voice was like the voice of God coming in.